works very hard on fitness and the running game.
That's what kind of led me to want this dream of being a racing driver.
There's no point in talking about anything except standards of excellence.
We will deal with the Tailteann Cup if we're in it, and we'll certainly give it every bit of respect.
There's no feeling that beats playing for Ireland. What's the
Elevelli? My God, I'm going to do everything that is possible to bring us there.
This is Sports Beat Extra on Beat.
I'm Adrian Johnson and welcome to this week's Sports Beat Extra. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear from Wexford FC manager James Keddy following their 1-0 loss in the First Division playoff semi-final first leg against Athlone Town and look ahead towards their second leg on Monday. And we'll reveal the winner of this month's Club Focus.
Sports Beat Extra.
Beat 102-103.
Wexford's Aidan O'Brien will be crowned Irish champion flat trainer for an incredible 28th time following next weekend's conclusion of the Irish flat season at the Curragh. O'Brien has had 11 Group 1 victories in Britain so far this season, 4 in France, 3 in Ireland, while Warm Heart won in the US in January. Dave Keenan spoke to the legendary trainer, who still has a busy few weeks ahead with the Breeders' Cup and Melbourne Cup.
Aidan, many congratulations, champion trainer again. Has there been a standout moment?
Listen, obviously a lot of great days, all very important days, David, you know, so there's so many of them. Really, we were just delighted. The horses kind of ran consistent well through the year. Like, we won some nice races and lost some, and, you know, but no, sure, we have to be very happy, really.
Do you set yourself any aims or ambitions over the course of the year when you start out?
No, never. One day at a time, one horse at a time, one race at a time, and when horses run, we make a plan. We make a early season plan and see then whether we can stick to it or whether we have to change it.
And I was interested when reading Mark Boylan's piece, when the horses come in to Ballydoyle, they're graded. How does that work, or what does that grading mean?
Yeah, no, the lads grade them from the time they're foals, from the minute they're born, all the way, and I think they grade them out of 10. And I suppose their monthly progression is marked and logged, and it's a very simple procedure, really, but obviously it's very effective.
Now, for people who don't follow racing, give us an idea as to what your daily routine would be and how many horses you would supervise over the course of a morning and how that works.
I know, I'd see all the horses, obviously, every day, every single day. That's what I do from morning to lunchtime. All the horses do their canters then, and obviously I'd see them all with everybody else. And then obviously go on lunch and back in the afternoon for everybody does the horse good for a walk and a pick of grass and groomed and get whatever therapies they're getting, physio or whatever, and whatever else, you know. So,
and out of that, is there any particular time that you are particularly fond of?
No, my day, I look forward to getting up every morning, and every part of the day I look forward to. Listen, it's a privilege really for me and us to be working there and working with some unbelievably well-bred horses and with so many special people, really.
And you're in Ballydoyle 28 years, and you're bringing the best horse you've ever trained out to America in City of Troy. It's a race that you love to win, obviously, the classic. How has his preparation gone, and when will he head over?
Yeah, I think he heads on Saturday. Everything so far has went well. Obviously, it's a day-by-day thing this time of the year, and obviously his preparation is tough, and will have to be tough to go out and compete there, where he's going to compete in probably one of the most, if not the toughest race in the world. Different continent, different surface, different pace, everything. Listen, obviously it doesn't get much tougher than this for a flat horse, really.
And you're well used to bringing those horses over. What does that involve and what does it entail for people who wouldn't follow racing?
Hey, obviously they just get on the plane, usually in Shannon, and fly across, and they stay in quarantine for a few days, and after a few days they're out on the track cantering, and it's kind of usually basic stuff, very simple really. Horses are very uncomplicated mentally, they don't think about the stuff we think, and they just kind of take it all in their stride, really.
And his mentality, you've always referred to it as being second to none. Will that be an asset to him over there, the atmosphere and the added little bit of stuff that goes on in America?
Yeah, no, obviously he's a very independent thinker, always was. He's not influenced by much that goes on around him, and he's if we have him in the right place, he won't, nothing else will bother him. So at the moment we're very happy, but he's a very independent thinker, and he's not led by anything or any a set of circumstances that are going on around him, really. He's his own horse, really.
And how many horses might you bring over to America?
I'm not sure, kind of 8, 10, 12, really. Obviously, we have a few days to go, and obviously the horses will have to come through the work, and then this time of the year horses can go very quickly. They can go off in 24 hours, and we're in most of the races, and obviously we will try and have runners in most of the races if they're well.
And the cycle continues on. You know, a lot of these horses, they'll move on, but then the yearlings, they'll come in at some stage in November, December, will it be?
Yeah, usually the middle of November they come in. They're broken and riding in Coolmore, and then they'll come over to Ballydoyle. Obviously then they'll canter away for the winter. The three-year-olds, they're not going to be kept as four-year-olds, will move out and go to all different places in the world. And then the yearlings come in, and the two-year-olds there move up where the older horses were, and it's just a kind of a cycle every year, really.
And it's an extraordinary little country when you consider last week Oisin Murphy, champion jockey, Sean Bowen, champion apprentice, and yourself and Willie, champion trainers in the UK, with no base over there. That's an extraordinary achievement for Willie and yourself.
Yeah, look, obviously, two countries are very close together, and the cultures are very connected. Listen, we're obviously delighted. Look, we're very lucky. We have some unbelievable horses to train, unbelievable facilities, and like, obviously training for the lads is incredible. Like, nobody understands it better than them, and nobody puts in as much as they do day in, day out. And listen, we're only kind of just delighted to be part of it and try and help the horses to show their full potential, really. But it's all team, really. There's like unbelievable amount of special people in Coolmore and America, Ireland, Australia, Ballydoyle. You know, so they're just an incredible team of people, really. And listen, for us to be a small part of it is a very big privilege, really.
And then as soon as America finishes, you're off to Melbourne, and Ryan is going to do 8-7 on Jan Brugel.
Yeah, that's the plan. So far everything's going good. Kieran and Dean are down there with him. So everything, I think they're happy with so far. I think that's the Tuesday after Breeders' Cup on the Saturday. So yeah, so I think everything so far is good. He's 8-7, and like I said, Ryan is doing 8-7, and that's unusual, but he wanted to do it, and we're delighted, obviously, and privileged to have him, and delighted that he's going down.
I think you'll be all tuned in America and Australia. Aidan, it's been an incredible year. Well done, and many, many congratulations, and plenty more to follow, hopefully.
Thanks, Dave. Pleasure.
Sports Beat Extra.
The First Division playoffs didn't quite get off to the start Wexford were hoping for, making the trip up to Lizzie Woolen after securing their place in the playoffs 2 weeks ago. James Keddie's side would have been looking to head into the return leg a goal or two ahead. However, a cold night in Athlone produced almost no chances from play, with only a penalty from Dean Ebby separating the sides. I caught up with Wexford boss James Keddie following the result.
Get your initial thoughts really after that game.
I don't think we did ourselves justice today. We didn't pass the ball well. Gave away a silly goal as well, and it was a disappointing night. But it's only half time, so playing at home on Monday, so we go again. You have to stay positive. We've been in this situation last year as well, so we give it a good bash on Monday.
Yeah. I mean, outside of the penalty, there wasn't really any main chances for either side that game. I mean, Aaron Dobbs had a great shot near the end of the first half, but outside of that, I can't think of one opportunity that really presented itself in open play outside of it.
No, I don't think either team really played well today. General play, our passing was poor, trying to force passes, and instead of keeping everything short, but you know, there was too many of our players that didn't really play well, and there'd be another chance in Monday to rectify what happened today.
Mm-hmm. It was obviously Thomas Alou was getting a lot of stick off the Athlone Town fans, which is probably to be expected considering he's a former player, but do you think that maybe got into his head a little bit today?
No, I don't think so. I think Thomas is old enough and to be able to take that. I think it's just part of the game. No, I don't think it definitely didn't get to Thomas's head.
Do you think it was fair, the amount of yellow cards that we ended up seeing in the game? And sort of maybe, would you say that there was a bit of level of inconsistency in match officiating today?
I think Oliver, I think the referees did a tough job. So, I think, you know, I'd have to look back in the game. I think maybe one or two of them could have been a little bit common sense, but I think Oliver had a decent enough game.
Now, obviously on Monday with Athlone coming down to you, are you almost instinctively preparing for a very defensive Athlone time side that come down to Ferncarrig?
No, I don't think. I think Athlone are the type of team that have to attack, and they've got some really good attacking players. Even the players they brought on, you know, they can hurt you, but you know, to win any game you have to defend well, and you know, there wasn't much in the game tonight. The panel has decided the game, but it's a long way to go. As I said to the lads, you know, there's a lot more in us. So, you know, as I said to you before, you have to be able to play under, you know, the pressure and Mondays, it's a game that we have to go on attack and see where it takes us.
A justified penalty, in your opinion?
That was a penalty, all right, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a penalty. Decision-making, obviously, from Lee, we could have been a little bit better, but there's a few things that happened before that you probably have to look back on as well. And but, you know, there's fine margins as well. It's a penalty. And he's tucked it away well, again, so... But, you know, looking back on the game, our set plays, our delivery on set plays weren't good today, and you know, they're the difference as well. You know, good deliveries on set plays could change the result.
And then I finally asked, do you think the surface in which the game was played on today made any impact on the game at all?
Sorry?
The surface, and with it being Astro as opposed to normal grass?
No, I don't think so. I think it's...
it's a clutch of straws there, am I?
Yeah, definitely. No, I never make excuses. Listen, it's 11-11. So, you know, obviously they play in every week, but we train on Astro as well, so I won't make that an excuse. We didn't play well, or as well as we could have played. So, again, we've a chance to go again Monday and hopefully do a little bit better.
Elsewhere in the other semi-final, Bray Wanderers will take a comfortable lead into the second meeting with UCD as they won 2-0. The second leg for Wexford will be played at Ferrycarrig Park at 3 p.m. on Monday, with UCD's second clash with Bray set to get underway at 5 p.m.
Backing sport across the southeast, Beats Club Focus.
As part of this month's Club Focus, we took a trip to Benacerri Carlow to chat with the Benacerri Drafts Club.
Well, I actually played with the club as a child myself, so it was my dad set the club up 40 years ago this year. Himself and another guy set it up between themselves, originally to compete in community games, but since then we've kind of diversified and we take part in many other competitions now.
That's Mairead Breen, a member of the club, and as she mentioned, the club has been alive and well for over 40 years. Mairead's dad, Patrick Breen, founded the club originally and is still heavily involved today. He says it's great to see the interest is still here.
Well, Patrick, you founded this club 40 years ago. What's it like seeing it here today still thriving?
Ah, sure, it's absolutely great. The light in life, really, you know. It was, I suppose we started about 50 years ago playing drafts. You know, we've been playing ever since, and then Mairead started up the drafts club at Benacerri when her kind of children were coming along, and I helped out her the best I could, and I helped to train them with her as well. Like, I might have maybe a little bit more knowledge than she might have, so I doing my best, like, really, that way. So that's basically what it was, like, really.
It must be great for you, though, to see Mairead still carrying the torch,
is it? It is great, of course. Like, it's great to see continuation, the drafts club continued and everything continued that way.
The Breens aren't the only family in the club introducing it to the next generation. Teresa and Chris were both part of the club in their youth and now have kids involved as well.
So how did you both get involved in the club to begin with? Were you here from the start, or how did you get onto it?
Yeah, well, I had gone to Benacerri School again a few years ago, so there was a history of it in the school, and you kind of got on the team, and then when it came a chance then for my own children to get on the team 20, 30 years later, we said, yeah, go for it. So now I have three children. Mia's on the 14 team, Cuiva's on the 12, and then Sean's on the 10 team. So, yeah, so for me, it's a progression and generation down, like, you know, and kind of even to see the board coming out home and everyone just sits around and plays, and we go to Granny's house, and then the board is taken out of Granny's house, and now even a cousin now from playing in Granny's house is now even on the 10 team. So it's just lovely just to see it coming back around, you know. So that's my story anyhow.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, Pat started here. I went to school with some of his daughters 40 years ago, and he used to get us all in the little PE hall in the school once a week. He used to bring over a crowd from Tiller Island. We'd spend an hour or two there battling against one another, get ready for community games. And I did it for 4 or 5 years, and the same as Teresa. I'm back now again. I have four kids myself, twin girls who are playing under 16, a little man who's playing under 16 as well, and the smallest little girl playing under 12s, and they're loving it. And it's the same thing in my house. You go down there on Christmas Day, the grandparents have the board out, the uncles and aunties have the board out. It's just a great game, and it travels down through generations, and I find it settles the kids in a house as well. They have to be quiet, to focus, they're off of tablets, off of TVs, off of Xboxes for at least an hour, maybe two, and it's just a good bit of crack.
Getting off the screens was also a sentiment shared by some of the club's younger members too.
I like how it gets us off our computer games, so then it like helps us get more healthy and get to go outside more.
Yeah, like getting off the screens and just seeing my friends and playing with them a lot.
I think it's good because like it gives us more like brain power, and it would like help us with like tricky situations, like in drafts, if you're in a tricky situation, and if that happens in real life, you just kind of think of drafts and stuff, so it's really good.
Drafts mightn't be the first sport or club you think about getting involved with, but club members and All-Ireland winners Paddy Breen and Eddie Keenan say it's a great hobby to pick up alongside other sports.
Lads, how do you initially get into this? Because, like, you know, there's always the options of, you know, doing hurling or football or soccer or whatever. Like, what's drafts kind of, like, it's not something you'd hear too much about anywhere, is it?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a thing you can do, you know, if it's raining or anything, and just, you know, you can play against each other and competitively, like, you know.
See, we got involved at the school of Bennekerry when we were young, like, and that was just kind of on after school. So we did that. Like, we still play soccer, football, all that. Like, but drafts is just something to have, like, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, having never played a game of drafts before, I had to get involved. Except I wasn't expecting to be put up against a 12-year-old drafts prodigy in Kenny.
I don't even know how to play a drafts, so this is going to be great.
Unsurprisingly to those who know me, I left walking away from the board with my tail between my legs after I was royally thrashed by Kenny, a point he made well known when I was chatting to him afterwards.
What did you say to me at the end of our match?
You may as well go back to the radio station.
There were words of wisdom to be imparted on me following my loss by Kenny, but not everyone thought I had a future in this game.
All right, lads, you played me, you watched me get horribly defeated. What's any advice, Kenny?
Probably never move your back rows out.
It might
make a difference in your game.
Yeah.
Don't play like you do, because that just doesn't help. Just try to play like him. Yeah, cameraman.
But he lost his second game, in fairness.
Yeah, but he won the second. No, he won his
first. Well, he had two games. I didn't get a second game, you never know.
But when you're left with seven pieces on the other team, pretty sure you'd lose your next game after that.
That's fair.
And then he only lost his with like five pieces left on it.
Yeah, but he was lucky. Christy helped him, didn't he, Kenny?
Yeah, he did.
You're pretty cut up about the defeat, are you?
Yeah, I'm really raging with Christy now.
Despite my disappointing display against Kenny, everyone at the club was so incredibly welcoming. And with a trip to Italy on the horizon, Mairead told me how much winning the €2,000 bursary would mean to the club.
Well, that would mean so much to us, because this club is completely run on a voluntary basis. There's no entry fee, nothing. You're welcome to come. And then, you know, I suppose it's the better players stick with us the longer. We actually, you know, we run on absolutely nothing. We mentioned the trip to Italy. Now, I know not the entire club is travelling, but the €2,000 would be huge towards the cost of trying to fly 16 children and 10 adults, you know, so some of it would go towards that. But as I said, you know, I even had to send home for two spare drafts boards from a family. We're short on everything. We've no funding at all. You know, we're relying again, as I said, on sponsors for our trip, but on the generosity of the community.
If you'd like the opportunity to be featured on Beats Club Focus, be sure to head on over to beat102103.com/clubfocus now.
Sports Beat Extra. Beat.
That's all for this week's Sports Beat Extra. You can listen back on our website, beat102103.com/podcasts. Coming up next, the soundtrack to your Saturday night, Beat Anthems.